Chapter 2. Aspen. The moment Rouge and Silas entered the temple, Aspen regretted letting them go. He knew well enough that Rouge, at least, was capable of taking care of herself, and neither of them would be grateful if he tried to command them to stay. Nonetheless, he was only able to restrain himself for a few minutes before he called them. Rouge? Silas? There was no response. He forced himself to take a breath and relax his shoulders. Panicking and attempting to force his way into the temple would not only fail, but also attract attention they couldn't afford. He was certain they were fine, since no one was running out of the temple or into it, given travelers' propensity for racing toward trouble, yelling about a fight. He spent the next several minutes alternating between calling the two girls and calming himself down when they didn't respond. He had nearly convinced himself it would be all right to go and at least add his name to the list, even if he had to pay for it with one of his dwindling cash of gems, when someone tapped him on the shoulder. He spun around, hand going to his side automatically, even though he wasn't carrying a weapon, since he was playing the role of simple farmer at the moment. When his eyes met Mott's, he let his breath out in a huff of relief, but frowned. "What are you doing here? You said you wouldn't be able to come back until evening. Is everything all right?" Mott flushed, his cheeks darkening as he touched his short, curly hair guiltily. "I got a headset so I could log on from work, too. I'm supposed to be grading papers." He shrugged. "It'll be fine. It's for an undergraduate class, and they're just supposed to translate a scene from King Lear to colloquial English. I can grade those in my sleep." The big man looked around. "What's going on? Where's Rouge?" Aspen glanced at the flow of travelers into the temple. "Inside. I can't get her to respond, and I don't know what's happening. It's only been about 15 minutes, but—" He trailed off, knowing Mott would understand. Rouge's father's face went serious. "I was reading a little bit about this. It's actually why I came back early. Apparently, there's a new boss in town, and he's made some changes. I couldn't find anything giving me details about this new lord, other than that he's a traveler, but the boards were blowing up over the changes. Rouge doesn't like spoilers, so she never checks until after she runs into something, so I figured she wouldn't know." He shook his head. "Anyway, the temple is one of the big ones. I've never even heard of this deity, Apophis, but apparently Bright now has an official religion. There are riddles and puzzles to get into any temple, except that of Apophis. The first one is a lore test. The second one requires the person to use a skill or spell they have, so it changes with each person or group. The third one is a riddle based on the Ga. Experiences of the person in your world, so that one can be unique, though we players often do a lot of the same quests, so there seem to be a few pretty standard ones. They're calling them the Temple Trials." He turned and looked at the temple, brown eyes worried. "There are two big things that have changed as a result of this trials business. The first is that anyone inside the temple can't communicate with anyone outside. Supposedly, that's to keep them from cheating and getting help on the trials. That's why you can't talk to her. The second one is that if you fail any of the trials, you get kicked out of the temple. Fail the first trial, and you can't go back for a day. Fail the second, and you lose 3 days. Fail the third, and you're locked out for 5 days. Aspen hissed through his teeth. "That would be after the triathlon, and certainly after the wedding. Rouge told me she was going in to accept a subclass she was offered. She looked pretty excited." A grin broke out on Mott's face. "She finally got one she likes? That's great." Rouge can be stubborn, the eyes of the two men met in mutual amused recognition of Mott's understatement, and she's been waiting for a rare subclass for a while now. Which one was it? Aspen chuckled and tugged at the brim of his hat. "She wouldn't say. Just said it was a job offer I like. I think she wants to surprise us." Mott rolled his eyes. "That girl. Well, then there's no way she's coming back out until she gets that class. Not unless she fails one of the trials. The first one is supposed to be easy, and the second one you can almost brute force your way through by just trying all your skills and spells if you can't figure out what you're supposed to do. The third one," he shook his head, "Rouge has done a lot here, and a lot of it was unusual. The examples I read about didn't sound too hard, but some of the more esoteric ones were tricky. This system was only implemented 4 days ago, so the first people to fail the third trial haven't been able to try again. Apparently the first one usually stays the same, but a few people said their second one changed. Sighing deeply, Aspen turned back to the temple. What do they do if they can't figure it out? Mott also turned to face the massive building. Most of them are converting to Apophis. He's a fairly generic battle-type god, I guess, so his buffs are as good as any other, and better than most. Most travelers go with whatever god is easiest, and you don't have to go through the trials to reach his temple. Unless you're a crafter, a healer, or have an unusually high reputation with your deity, it's not a big deal to just switch. Aspen smiled a little grimly. Bruce won't switch. Mott nodded agreement. No way. The two men watched the building for a while longer, and now that Aspen knew what to look for, he noticed that a few of the travelers exiting the building looked very unhappy. It hadn't struck him before, because it wasn't that unusual for his people to enter the temple and request a healing or a blessing and be turned down, either because they weren't worthy, or their god simply decided that whatever was going on in their lives was necessary. As he understood it though, travelers were never denied. They always got the cleanse, heal, or blessing they asked for, though they were charged money for some of the services which natives weren't. Healing, whether of wounds or disease, was always expensive, but blessings and dispelling curses were up to the grace of the gods. Which reminded him. How long can you stay? He asked Mott. The tall warrior grimaced. Honestly, not long. I wanted to tell you and Rouge about this change before anyone went in. I really should get back to work. Why? Aspen sighed. I have some things I need to do. I was hoping you could wait for Rouge while I went to do them. The other man shook his head. I wish I could, though I'm not thrilled at the idea of you wandering around alone. I know no one can attack you while you're on public bluestones, but if you go onto private property, all bets are off. Plus, we have to assume there's still a price on your head. If the guards identify you, you'll probably be arrested. Aspen ground his teeth. It still infuriated him that his face was on a wanted poster. Even though Manuela had easily severed the ties between him and any items that could be used to track him, he knew he could still be recognized and captured. One of the things he needed to do was begin investigating who was after him, and why. I know, he admitted grudgingly. But now that I'm here, it's hard to just stand and wait. There's so much to do, and I just want to get it over and go home. All of this, he looked around at the buzzing crowd, everyone tense and hurried, isn't my life anymore. I don't want it to be. I just want to watch my crops grow and spend time with my family. It was true too. Seeing the madding crowd had simply driven home the fact that this wasn't his home anymore. He had no interest in wearing fine clothes, having an entourage, or seeing fear on anyone's face when they looked at him. He'd spent far too long being feared. He wanted to be comfortable and happy and yes, loved. Or at least liked. Mott sighed and rubbed his hand over his head. As he did, his eyes went briefly flat and his face blank. Then the moment passed, and he looked a bit embarrassed. Damn it. Sorry, I'm not used to the headset. I knocked it loose. Aspen looked at him, finally noticing that his friend did look a bit different today. His motions were stiffer, articulating only at the joints, instead of the fluid, powerful whole-body movement that he usually had. He was also just a bit slower? As if it took a moment for his body to understand what his mind wanted him to do. What is it like, he asked hesitantly, when you come here? I guess I imagined it was like dreaming. Perhaps you lie down and fall asleep. Or perhaps you leave your body there in the same way you leave this one here. The big man paused for a long moment, as if trying to decide what to say. Look, it's odd that you even pay attention to this stuff. Before I met you and your friends, natives didn't really seem to pay attention to the fact that travelers were sometimes here and sometimes not. Your people just kind of walk around us, and when we come back, you just take it in stride, as if it were the most normal thing in the world. He shrugged. So, it makes me a little uncomfortable to talk to you about it. Or, he hesitated again, looking frustrated, not uncomfortable, but I don't know how to explain it. It makes you too real, I guess. Mott held up a hand, his deep voice going deeper still with the depth of his sincerity. You are real. In a way that I never thought about before Rouge got involved in this. They say that discomfort is a necessary part of enlightenment, and that's certainly true. His expression settled into determination, and he went on. When Rouge and I come here, we wear special clothes, and we do lie down in a kind of bed. It uses something you'd probably see as magic to send us here, but it's just technology. There is no magic in our world. Those beds are complex machines, and I don't think there are many people who really understand how they work. Just like people here trust mages to cast the right spell, even though they themselves can't use magic, in my world, we trust our machines to do what we tell them to, even when we don't know how they do it. He raised a hand to tap his forehead. Other people like Rouge's friend Lyric use headsets like what I'm wearing now to get here. It's much less expensive than the bed. Kind of like the difference between buying a horse and buying a house. The headset works with some gloves to allow people to use gestures to control their body here, though some people don't even have the gloves. They just use a, he motioned as if grabbing and holding something, a joystick. Aspen finally managed to speak, though it was hard to do so through the laugh that was trying to escape. A joystick. Mott laughed a little. Yeah. I never really thought about it, but it is a funny name. I bet there's a story there. In any case, the headset and gloves or joystick don't let us reach your world nearly as well. We can't smell, taste, or feel nearly as much, and pain is barely more than discomfort. A lot of the travelers who just go out and fight monsters are headset players. You can't really forget that you're not actually here while you're using a headset. His head suddenly jerked up, and his eyes locked on a space beyond Aspen. Speaking of which, someone is knocking at my office door. I'm going to set my zombie to follow you. Stay here, please. I'll be back as soon as I can. With that, he reached up and slid his hands over his face. As his fingers slid over his forehead, his body stilled, and his face became lifeless. Aspen shuddered. That is still horrifying. Maybe more so now that I know they're just puppets. He reached up and rubbed at his own forehead. His head was pounding, and he suddenly felt a little dizzy. He blinked and then blinked again. A flash of light flickered behind his lids, and he had a sudden sharp vision of a person sitting in a strangely smooth chair, a black mask covering most of their face and ears. Light shone off the mask like glass, but it was completely opaque. On the figure's hands were two thick gloves. They were almost more like the bulky mitts that fighters wore when they were training in hand-to-hand combat, so that they wouldn't hurt each other too badly. The person suddenly jumped from their chair, waving their obscured appendages wildly. Then the vision faded, leaving him with a headache and a thousand questions. Aspen. The flat voice coming from his left nearly made him jump, and he realized that he had completely lost track of what was happening around him. His hand reached for a non-existent weapon, but then his brain processed who was standing beside him, and he relaxed somewhat. My Lee. I'm sorry, I didn't see you. He swiped a hand across his eyes, blinking in sudden exhaustion. The priestess tilted her head. Are you well? You seemed momentarily disoriented. Aspen drew in a deep breath and let it out slowly. I'm fine, I think. I didn't realize you were here. I thought you left with Restor and the others. He looked around. Are they back already? Restor said the warehouse is on the other side of the city, by the exotic goods market. Milay's pale, expressionless eyes were locked on his. I did. I suddenly had a feeling that I needed to return. When I arrived, you didn't notice. Closing his eyes, he drew in a few more breaths, feeling the ground beneath his worn thin boots, hearing the frustrated murmuring of the crowds, and smelling the hot, dusty air filled with the odors of a thousand people. He grimaced. It's just hot and stuffy. I got used to quiet and open spaces, and this, he gestured at the sea of beings swirling around them, is not pleasant. I forgot how many people live in the city. She nodded, her sleek black hair swinging smoothly around her pale face. There are a great number of sapients here. It must be overwhelming for you. The pale eyes, surrounded by the traditional mask of red makeup, flicked to Mott. What were you and the Guardian talking about? Aspen shook his head. He was telling me about his world. It sounds complicated. Something flickered across her face. Sadness? Anger. Whatever it was gone so quickly that he almost thought he had imagined it, except that a bare hint of it remained in her voice when she spoke, making it sharper than usual. They make it more complicated than it has to be. He narrowed his eyes. They? She paused for a long moment, expression utterly blank, and when she spoke again, no trace of feeling remained. Others. What seems complex to one person may be simple to another, is that not true? Her eyes were cool and assessing as she looked at him, and he felt as if she could see inside him, to the unsteady foundation of his character. If you are well, then I may return to my business. Perhaps it would be best if you avoided such discussions in the future, however. Looking into the frozen lakes of her gaze, he felt suddenly muddled again, though it was a very different feeling from the sense of detachment he'd felt after his strange vision. That vision, too, seemed oddly distant, and he couldn't seem to remember exactly what. He shook his head again, as if driving away a troublesome insect. Ah. Yes. I guess it doesn't matter how they come here, only that they do. I. Aspen. This time it was a cheerful voice that drew his attention, and he looked away from the priestess, feeling an almost physical wrenching sensation as their eyes left each other. Millie was standing nearby, her hand on Struthio's arm. Bright rings glinted from the second fingers of their left hands, and their faces were wreathed in smiles, though a hint of trepidation clouded their joy. Millie raised her hand, and the ring there glinted gold to match the long braids coiled around her crown. I'm sorry. They said if we wanted witnesses, we'd have to wait a week, and pay more money too. We couldn't afford. Congratulations. He pushed his hat back, letting her see his face clearly for a moment so she could read the pleasure there. She and her new husband relaxed, smiles growing even wider. He tugged the brim of his hat back down and continued, I would've loved to see TH wedding, but TH important thing is that you're happy. We can still celebrate with you, eh? Struthio grinned and wrapped his arm around his wife's shoulders. Next to him, the nearly 6-foot-tall Amazon looked almost petite. Aye. We hoped he'd say to. He looked around. All are gone? Aspen nodded. We didn't know how long you'd be gone, and Rubico needed to unload the wagons and let his people rest. He said he'd be back as soon as he could, and young Vaughn with him. Manuela and likely some others'll be coming as well. He tilted his head to indicate Mott's zombie. Mott came to check on you, and Rouge is inside visiting Gina's temple. He briefly considered telling them about the girl's impending class change, but after a glance around, decided to wait and let her decide who she wanted to tell. Usually, the change was great enough that others would know something had happened, so it wouldn't be a secret for long, but it was hers to tell, and in any case, this moment belonged to the two lovers. From what I hear, Rouge'll likely be a while, so mayhap you'd like to get some lunch. There are some good diners nearby, he caught himself at the looks of surprise on their faces. He reminded himself he was just a farmer who had never been to Bright before. Ah, or at least that's what Mott said. Rouge'll find us when she gets done and Restor or Vaughn'll meet us ere in a while. Or at least Rouge would call him and party chat, as long as they didn't go far. He motioned toward a narrow road near the main entrance to the temple square. Mott said to go that way. His eyes caught on Mai Li, and he suddenly realized that he'd almost forgotten the woman was there. He nodded to her hesitantly. Would Wai like to join us, priestess? Struthio was shuffling his feet, and a pretty blush had risen on Millie's strong cheekbones. As the girl opened her mouth, Aspen realized what the problem probably was. Ah, my treat, eh? I had a good harvest, and TH travelers saved me money on getting here. I have enough. After an uncertain exchange of glances, Millie nodded, her fingers closing on Struthio's thin hand. Emile'd be welcome. Em husband, and the blush deepened again, needs teat, and I'd like to see what food people enjoy here. Aspen chuckled. The chef obviously wanted a chance to size up the competition, and he couldn't blame her for doing it on someone else's copper. He looked back to Mai Li, who had a very strange expression on her face. Almost confusion? Happiness? It was as though the priestess had never been asked to share a meal before, and didn't know how to respond. Finally, the woman nodded. I would like that. Perhaps you could assist me in choosing an ingestible, however. My preferences are not set. He shrugged. I'm sure we can find something you'll like. The small group of five, including Mott's obedient zombie, turned and made their way against the flow, back toward the entrance to the main road leading to and from the square. Aspen quickly found that this experience too was far different from the one he had had in his past life as Yorga's Penbrook, Atai's left hand. Even his height wasn't enough to convince people to make room, and he didn't want to attract attention by forcing his way upstream. Millie, seeing his conundrum, quickly took over. Pushing ahead of him, the lady plowed through the crowd like a regal mother duck on a placid lake, leaving Aspen and the others following in her wake like proper ducklings. Struthio, whom Aspen had considered a bit of a dullard, caught Aspen's gaze, and one limpid blue eye closed in a slow, conspiratorial wink. Aspen's mouth dropped open slightly, and then he laughed out loud, though the sound was lost in the sound of the indignant squalling of those Millie had inconvenienced. The group split off down the much smaller, quieter street that Aspen had indicated, and the sound of the crowds were almost instantly muffled. Aspen felt his shoulders drop from where they had drawn tight up around his ears. He looked around. Mott said, he glanced at the large man, feeling somewhat apologetic for putting words in his mouth, there are three places down here. A tavern, a diner, and a proper restaurant. What did ye like to eat? He looked at Millie and Struthio, since My Lee had said she had no preference. Hadn't she? Millie thought about it for a moment. Th tavern, I think. A man is happiest while a belly full o' good warm food. None o' those fancy little fripperies. They're fun to make ever now and then, but not all th time. It'd be good teasy if the things we like in Norgoose are the same as the city folks like. The barest hint of insecurity touched her voice, and Aspen saw Struthio's fingers tighten reassuringly on hers. The farmer smiled. I think while find ye've nothing to worry about, lass. This way. He motioned toward a door standing open at the end of the block. Above it was a shield-shaped sign, carved with the image of a rampant pony clutching a foaming mug between its front hooves. When they reached the door, Aspen pushed it open and ushered the others inside. They stood in a small group in the dim interior, gazing around at the display. Aspen barely managed to contain a grin at the awestruck looks on Millie and Struthio's faces. The drunk pony was well known and bright. During the war, it was a place that soldiers liked to go after praying at the temple, and before they were deployed the next day. Occasionally, a knight or other lordling would find themselves here, and it was traditional that the tavern keeper, who was a retired sergeant himself, would give those officers their first drink on the house. No one knew exactly what was in that beverage, since the man kept it behind the bar in a plain clay jug, but inevitably the officer became very happy for a period which was rapidly followed by unconsciousness. The officer's men would have to return him to his lodgings, but not before the tavern keeper made a sketch of the heraldic device of his latest victim. That device was then carved into some part of the tavern decor, thus constantly adding to the legend. Now in times of peace, the tradition had lapsed, but every part of the interior, from the bar itself to the broad beams holding up the ceiling, was covered in carvings. Lions passant frolicked with foxes current, while two hedgehogs salient leapt from a bear dormant. These whimsical creatures were interspersed among billets, annulets, and frets, wyverns and griffins, and wound with grapevines and cinquefoil. From behind the immaculate bar, a wizened man looked up. His voice was rough but cordial when he spoke. Seat yourself. If ye want food, a server'll come. If ye want drink, just yell at Tommy. A simple black patch covered one eye, and Aspen knew that if he came out from behind the bar, he'd be missing a leg as well. Lark, Aspen's cleric daughter, had once offered to ask Gina to regrow it for him, and the old soldier had refused her outright. He was done with war, he said, and if he had two good legs and two good eyes, he'd be sent to the front lines to die with the rest. He'd stay right there, and at least die protecting his home and his family. Millie led the way to a booth to one side, and Aspen slid in after Miley, positioning himself so his back was to the wall, and he could see the door as well as the curtain that covered the entrance to the kitchen. Mott's zombie remained standing, an impassive and looming presence that the server, a young man of about Rouge's age, cast more than one apprehensive glance. "What'll you have?" the nervous young man asked, carefully standing as far from the tall traveler as possible. "We've got a turkey sandwich made with bread fresh baked this morning or a stew of venison and root vegetables. If you just want a bit, there's bread and hard cheese." Millie ordered the stew for Struthio and the bread and cheese for herself. Miley also asked for bread and cheese, and Aspen suddenly found that a simple sandwich sounded delicious. He knew from past experience that the portion would be hearty, and the cook made an excellent dressing that she slathered on the bread, and covered the meat and whatever vegetables were fresh in her garden. The boy took their order, and made his way back toward the kitchen. As he did, a young traveler with a lute on his back entered and went up to the tavern keeper. They spoke for a moment before the old man gestured to a small open area next to the bar, and shrugged. The young man, who had a round pale face with an open cheerful expression and large blue eyes beneath a mop of light blonde hair, went to the open area and pulled up a stool. He sat down and began to tune his instrument. Millie sat up straight, looking pleased. A bard. I love music while I eat. Aspen, who was first nearly as pleased as the chef, winced as an overly sharp note twanged through the room. A string snapped, and the young bard, after glancing around to see who had noticed, restrung his instrument with the ease of long practice. Once he was done, he again set to tuning, accompanied by the whining complaints of his strings. By the time he actually began singing, even Millie was looking apprehensive. Upon a white horse. My love ran off course. With a fiddle, DD. And a fi. With three legs the same length. Of uncommon strength. And one that was weak and ran wild. I followed my heart. Until it came apart. With a fiddle, DD. And a fi. Aspen covered his ears with his hands, and looking around, he could see that the expressions of the few others sitting in the large room indicated that they, too, were noticing the distinctly off-key sound of the lute, and the unfortunate falsetto in which the young man was singing. The boy's face, which grew more and more desperate and embarrassed, indicated that he, too, was aware that he was not, in fact, a good musician. As he reached the crescendo of the song, his voice cracked and then dropped an octave, which was actually an improvement, though it was obviously unintentional. The look of surprise and dismay on the lad's face as he struggled to pull his voice back up into the key in which he'd begun the song triggered a sudden feeling of recognition in Aspen. Eyes narrowed, he tried to tune out the horrendous racket and simply focus on the young man's face. His eyes suddenly widened as he remembered where he'd seen the boy before, and it took a moment longer to dredge the name attached to that memory from his brain. The strings of the lute abruptly snapped, dropping the tavern into a silence equally horrified and relieved even as Aspen opened his mouth and asked, "Lyric?"